Welcome to a special episode of Just Us and the Climate. In August 2025, during Women's Month in South Africa, we hosted a powerful webinar titled Women on the Frontlines: Lived Realities of the Water and Energy Crises in Rural and Township South Africa. The conversation centered the voices of women leaders in the coalition who are carrying the heaviest burdens of South Africa's ongoing water and energy crises, and yet are also leading struggles for justice, resilience, and local solutions. What you're about to hear is a recording of that webinar, where organizers from across the country shared their experiences, strategies, and visions for a gender-just and climate-just future. Let's dive in.
My name is Francine Nkosi, and then I will be facilitating this session today. And thank you so much for everyone making time to be with us. Thank you so much. And on the panel now, we have great leaders. Can I please close the video for now so that I can save other people's data if I'm being permitted to do so? Thank you. On the panel, we have three great women who are with us today to tell us their stories and also why here. And for us today, the reason for us to be here, we are celebrating Women's Day, and it's all about the care work, children and elderly, entrepreneurship, agriculture, GBV, and mental health, and also looking at our work in communities. And on my list here, as we look at the pamphlet as it is, I have Simpiwe Zwane. Simpiwe Zwane is an organizer with the Thembelihle Crisis Committee, TCC, since 2002. She's advocating for communities' rights in Thembelihle, south of Joburg. From 2011 to 2016, she served as the PR counselor in the city of Joburg under Operation Kanyisa Movement. Recognizing the importance of solidarity, unity, collaboration, Simpiwe is driven to create positive change. And she's also the steering committee for Climate Justice Committee. Simpiwe, can you give us a welcoming note? And then I'll move to another one. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Simpiwe, as my comrade said, from Thembelihle. I'm happy to be here and hoping that out of this today celebration, Women's Month, and the discussion will have more way forward, going forward, or to bring change within these challenges that we're having. Thank you.
Thank you, Simpiwe. And then next on my list, we have Nomfundo Mkoba. I hope I've pronounced your name well. Nomfundo is an environmental activist from Egabeni, Durban, with over a decade of experience in community development and resilience. A Tikano Health Equity South Africa Global Fellow and alumna of the Center of Environmental Rights School for Activists, she is the founder of Omama Bemvelo, an initiative empowering the unemployed mothers in low-income communities through environmental conservations. Over to you, Nomfundo.
Sanibonani, igama lami uNomfundo ngowakaMkhaba, ngisuka phansi eMkhomazi ongagcwala ugcwala ngomoya kwesikapu zekhemisi ibhinqa elibhidizayo. It's a great opportunity to be in this discussion and just to close off Women's Month. And I'm hoping this does not be a conversation that ends here, but is a conversation that we advocate, we articulate in our own relative spaces. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nomfundo. And on my list, I have Lisa Makaula. Lisa is a social and environmental justice activist with a background in public relations and communications. She has worked through amplifying voices of communities to deliberating on policy and advocacy. Lisa Makaula provides herself in working towards good governance and sustainable development. Over to you, Lisa.
Thank you, Mama Francina. I'm actually very grateful and honored to be part of this panel and here today. I think it's a very phenomenal month, celebrating women and also just speaking about the challenges that women face on a day-to-day basis. So out of the conversations that we have today, I believe that we should have a way forward in terms of how do we address those challenges and how do we work together to actually bring about change in communities. And I think with the woman who took it to the streets to march for banning of pass laws, this month is actually a very vital and critical month for us because it portrays the strength that we have and the impacts that women have had over the years. So I'm looking forward to the conversations and thank you so much.
Thank you, Lisa. And how are we going to do this? I'm going to give each 5 minutes. I'm going to pose those questions to you. And we're going to have a moment for us here in participants to be able to give some questions, some comments as a conversation. We are not going to close the doors for you. We're doing this as a conversation for us as women to be able to do a robust debate or conversation. Okay, my first question, I'm going to put it as the way I've introduced you, and it means I'm going to start with Simpiwe. How has the water and energy crisis affected your daily lives and the lives of the women in your community? Can you share recent moments or stories that will help us understand? And that's your 5 minutes. And then after you, Simpiwe, we'll go to Nomfundo and then lastly to Lisa. The same question, it applies to everyone. How has the water an energy crisis affected your daily life and the lives of the women in your community? Can you share the recent moments or stories that will help us understand? Thank you. Simpiwe.
Thank you. Thank you, Francina. water and this energy crisis within our communities are really affecting us. As women, on shaping our daily routines, life, obviously, because, I mean, we cannot think straight if there's no water or energy in the house, there's no electricity. What do you have to do? You have to think, what are your options now? What do you have to do since you don't have electricity? You need to prepare food for your kids. You need maybe to iron washing for your school uniform for your kids. I mean, but there's no electricity. And also there's no water. There's nothing that you can do. We can't even do the house chores when there's no water. So it affects us. We can't even plan our daily routines. Health-wise, we know the health hazard. When there's no water, we are affected. Recently, we had COVID that we were taught that we need to wash our hands time and a time. So with no water, you cannot do that. When it comes to e-safety within my community, we had a challenge where our taps will run dry the whole day, and the water will come out of our tap around 12 midnight, 1 a.m. Then that's the time that you'll be able to go out and fetch water. And that alone, it put our life at risk because of the high rate of crime in our communities or in South Africa particularly. So that we are not safe. And most of the time, it's us women that will wake up at that time going outside to fetch water. Obviously, I'm living in an informal settlement, so we don't have taps in our inside our informal settlement, but taps are outside. So you have to go out that time of the night to risk your life so that we can have water. So that it affects our lives big time. And economic, also it affects our economic opportunities. I mean, water scarcity causes health issues like diarrhea diseases as well as economy problems such as agricultural losses, rising costs of the water, the energy, and obviously this, we are not employed, so we are trying to make a living. So we open our small businesses within our communities. So it costs us a lot. Instability of those businesses is not good, because obviously when there's no water, you cannot do your quota haze, like I call mine. I used to call mine quota haze, where we sell fast food. I cannot open, so I have to close that until I have water. So on that day, it means I cannot provide for my kids. Also, our education for our kids has been affected, because kids will go in the morning to the school at around 11. They'll be sending back, the school will be sending them back to say there's no water, so they have to come back home because they cannot flush the toilet. So it affects even kids at schools. So it's a serious problem. Thank you for now, come. Obviously, those challenges are caused by collapsing of infrastructure, water pollution, and this climate change, poor management of infrastructure. It's a problem. Thank you, comrade.
Thank you, Simpiwe. Our next speaker, can you come in?
Thank you so much for that, Simpiwe. So since our struggles as women is really intersected, I'm really not going to shy away from some of the things that Simpiwe has shared. But I think the most focus for me has centered around the nutritious food that we have when we don't have correct clean water. So our agriculture, even in small-scale farming, is affected. So basically, as the primary caregivers of homes, we bear the responsibilities on what then now looks nutritious. Because even when we cook, we do need water. But I also want to flag the mental health for women in rural or townships. Just piggybacking on some of the things that some people shared around the economy, around our businesses, how are we really functioning, and definitely our livelihood, how is then that affected? I think without the water, I mean, we fully are aware that with the research and experiential narratives that we've seen, when there's no electricity, women have become more vulnerable, because there's walking from the bus stop, catching a taxi if you're working away from home, and how very like the kilometers of you walking from the bus stop home. And depending on those type of communities, do they have forums? And within those forums, do you have women representatives that make it even worse? Because now these formations within these communities affect the well-being of these women, because Who do we then trust? Because we don't know where the danger comes from. Number two, I think participating in our kids' livelihood becomes affected because I have to get home, I have to fetch water, I have to make sure that it's cooked. Checking on kids' educational journeys is also something that becomes a burden to women, because now she has to check homework. If there's no electricity, I'm unable. I cannot afford a candle, because we're looking at even affording a simple thing as just a candle. So can you imagine the other alternatives of gas stoves and the other options that may be available on the market, that it hits on a woman's pocket? And in most cases, these townships are single income homes, or they're dependent on government grants. So these grants can only facilitate so much in terms of groceries, and we then prioritize. So by the time you're getting a certain alternative income, stream of income, it's already gone, because there's so much of prioritizing in how you are allocating this budget. With water, just the basic hygiene. As women, we are bearers of children. And I think it's very much for us to then also note that during this maternal phase, we need water to clean ourselves, to wash our kids, to make sure that our babies are fine. And if that does not happen, it causes a mental strain on women. We're also looking at the infrastructure. If we don't have water, we have open sewers that are getting into routes that we are accessing. Kids will randomly just play in this open sewer. So what does that mean? Mom will have to take time off work to facilitate this process in going to a clinic, and also going to a clinic. Are they? Do they have facilities enough? Do they have capacity to then cover, making sure that I don't lose my my pay for that day? So then public policies also impede on how a mother moves around, or she controls her movement. Sometimes you say, no, that scar will heal on its own, because we need the money to function in the home. And also looking at your application, sometimes I'm called for an interview. There's no electricity. There's no water for me to have a bath, to even just move, make a movement to then access. Even accessing these platforms, these social virtual platforms, how accessible is it to women who don't have an income, who have single incomes, or they're due for an interview? So also that impedes on her mental capacity. We're also looking at the cultural appropriation of accessing communal taps, accessing water trucks, depending on the patterns or the schedules of these water trucks, or the proximity of these water tanks. It burdens the woman, because she needs to walk to get to a truck. If the truck comes late at night, there's also a gender-based violence element, because she can be exposed to so much of dangers that lurk wherever she's getting the water. If there's no street lights in those areas, or there's no lights at all, we've had shedding, it exposes her. It exposes children also to that vulnerability, that if their mother is not there working late, kids will then have to facilitate this process of getting water. And we're looking at schools as well, just going back to that point, kids get bullied for the fact that they don't have their clothes washed. They don't have basic hygiene as well. They're coming to school with their hair in a different state. It also affects their concentration, because water gives an element of oxygen for you to concentrate. So the academic experience or the educational journey of a child is affected. We're looking also at the elderly and differently abled bodies who don't have access to good water or energy. If Ugogo is at home, she's 60, she's differently abled, she does not, is unable to access communal tap, or is unable to access a water tank, because she could have not heard maybe a notice being given. She did not see because she's at home. Also that causes, if she has chronic disease, it exacerbates her mental health. So there's definitely many factors. If there's no water, I cannot go to work. What happens to the livelihood of this home? Also relationally. As women, we are in relationships, and the contamination of water. We also have maybe just pH levels, depending on what we're eating and what we're exposed to. So if this pH is also affected by contaminated water, depending, is it the solid waste contamination that's going into the water? Is it chemical emissions that are going into the water and we don't have the proper infrastructure to clean? We get water, we might have weeks without water, and we go to these open sources that are contaminated. And if I'm consuming it as a woman and I don't understand the contamination, what it does to my body, and depending also on the awareness of information of how this water affects my health, if I'm intercourse with my partner, I could have an STI, which could also exacerbate gender-based violence. So a woman, the cycle definitely continues. Also, while on her on womanhood, women need water to facilitate that whole process. So women are continuously burdened by not having access to water, and it becomes a mental strain for women not having to access water just from the basic hygiene. And also the informal sector, women don't have maternity leave in the informal sector. So her body takes the strain. Her livelihood takes the strain because she's prioritizing on the on how to invest. And we're looking at fast food. Is it hygienic enough for us to consume the type of fast food that is there? Yes, that economy could grow, but is this fast food healthy enough for us? Because also there's an element, are these products being used, generated for the better of health while we don't have water? Because things like starch, it could exacerbate your health. So we're looking at those things. And also the agriculture becomes affected. What type of food is within those communities that don't have water? I'm just going to leave it at that. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I'm sure my other colleague will share. Thank you so much, Francina.
Thank you, Nomfundo. Can I pass it to our next speaker, Lisa? The floor is yours.
Thank you, Mama Francina. I think my colleagues have raised critical points today when it comes to energy issues as well as a water crisis. These are the very important but also critical factors that affect women. And I think with South Africa, we understand that a lot of households are headed by women, almost like 42% of them are headed by women. So it raises quite a serious concern, particularly towards in terms of the initiative that government is taking to address issues that are related to energy, but also that are related to water. And I think what we have seen over the years in South Africa is that currently the issue is energy access, and electricity has become more expensive. And obviously then that puts a burden onto, you know, those women-headed households, because now the mother needs to try and figure out, how am I going to pay for electricity? How am I going to put food on the table? And we understand how South Africa's economy has been, but also just how the unemployment rates have been going up. So it is a serious crisis that needs, you know, women to stand up and just continue to raise these injustices and see what would be a possible solution to all these issues. But just to the point of energy crisis, what we have seen in the work stream that we are doing is that we have seen that with South Africa's coastlines, almost 90% of oceans have been leased off for oil and gas exploration. And when government explains it, the aim is to address energy issues in South Africa. But then the real question now goes to say, what are the implications towards the communities that are living along the coast? And we understand that there are women that go for fishing to actually gain, We understand that there are women that go for fishing to actually have access to livelihood through the oceans. We also understand that there are women that have shops to actually provide for their families, and that is through fishing. So all of those issues are the issues that we have been trying to raise, and it's issues that constantly seem to be what the communities along the coast to be fighting for in terms of being heard, that this is what we live on for our livelihood. So in a case whereby there is a blowout, how will this then impact us? But also it relates to in terms of contamination of oceans, because in a case whereby there's a blowout, then that means the oceans become contaminated. And then the women that depend on those oceans for a living can no longer fish to provide for their families. But at the same time, the marine life gets to be, in a contaminated environment, and there's a possibility that the fish could die in the process, and that all affects women. And the toxins out of that water, because now if the fish are now have been exposed to contaminated water, it then changes the way that it is. And when a woman consumes that, it means that it could have an impact in the way that they bear children. You know, they could give birth to deformed kids because of the toxins that have been found in that water due to oil blowouts. So those are the issues that we are trying to raise, especially during this Women's Month. I think it's a very critical month to try and amplify the issues that women are facing and continue to face because of the lack of will from government, I would say, in terms of addressing these issues, because you find out there's policies that have been brought forward, but they are not addressing the real issues on the ground. And I think the comrades on this call would recall when it comes to the recent policy that we have been engaging with, which is called the Integrated Resource Plan, which speaks to the electricity plan. So when we looked at that policy, it was mostly suggesting technologies that are expensive, which would mean the cost of electricity would go up for vulnerable communities. So those are the things that we need to see change. We need to see change in policies. We need to see them reform and speak to the needs of the communities. I think I will leave it there, Mama Francina. Thank you.
Thank you so much to everyone. And then I have the next question. And the next question is, how have women in your community been organizing or coping or finding solutions to the challenges? And on this one, I'm going to give 3 minutes each so that we can able to have time for the last question that I'm going to put, and then open up to the participants. How have women in your community been organizing, coping, or finding solutions to these challenges? Over to you, Simpiwe, and then Nomfundo will follow, then Lisa. Thank you so much.
Thank you again. One, I will say, obviously, one, we are made to believe that this water scarcity or energy problems are caused by us as communities. With that, and thinking that maybe by uniting other women, like within the communities, that's what we are trying to do, doing workshops, trying to advocate for equal decision and making power. So we are running workshops, leadership programs, trying to have conversations with our fellow members within the community, that we need to save water and how to bath. You can use your water many times. You can wash dishes and also go to use that water in your garden. So those are the programs that we are trying to run. But we are on a process of trying to mobilize so that we can make something like a march, or do something like a white paper to the office of the president to say, no, this is enough. We are human. We also can see that this is a strategy. We think this is a strategy, actually. It's not because of we don't have water, since we know that they are not maintaining the infrastructure properly. Actually, they're not maintaining it. So this is not our fault. So we will be writing a white paper to the office of the president to say, no, this is enough. I mean, water is life, energy, it's life also. We also having a conversation within our community that as women, we need to be supportive. We need to support each other. Now people are trying to play something like Stokvels so that we can buy JoJo tanks for each a member of a community in a yard. Then we buy each JoJo tank. So, yeah, those are the things that we are trying to do within our communities. But I think we need also to advocate for an equal right as women, because we are mostly affected by these things. And it's like our voice are not heard enough. So it's high time that we mobilize as women, we unite and talk in one voice. Yeah, thank you, comrade.
Thank you, Simpiwe. Nomfundo, over to you.
Thank you so much for that, Comrade Francine and Simpiwe. I think what we have been noticing to, in a way, to mobilize and organize in my community, as of course we know, Mama Bembelo, is we have started to clean illegal dump sites. So we are aware during weather changes that these contaminants don't go into our available water sources. So during this cleanup as well, what we make accessible wood, so women and children don't have to walk for a very long distance. So we clean the available wood and leave them at designated sites where we usually clean. We've also been seeing some change. We have more women tenderpreneurs. I'm quite hypocritical about that growth, because we fully understand the dynamics around water trucks. But we've seen more women in that space that are also allocating water to rural communities. So it's quite exciting because we then fully understand that they would advocate more for some of the issues that women face. So yeah, that's where we are at. Thank you so much, Francine.
Thank you, Nomfundo. Lisa?
Thank you, Comrade Francina. When it comes to organizing, what we have been doing is we have been very vocal in terms of policy reforms. And one of the legal frameworks that we have been very engaged with is the Integrated Energy Plan, which we do believe that if we could try and get that plan into place, it would speak to all the issues that the communities are facing, especially towards the energy issues. But also, it is an opportunity whereby communities can now think the type of development that they want and then suggest that development in terms of we want socially owned renewables for us to meet our, you know, to reduce our reliance on these fossil fuel projects, but also at the same time to provide employment to the youth, especially with the new emerging markets. So those are the opportunities that we have been trying to push forward in communities in terms of making sure that women are involved in decision making and making sure that their voices are included, because we have found out that it has been an issue whereby women or communities are not actually involved in decision making. And that is a very important, important point for communities to make sure that whatever happens in their country, they are involved, they make comments, they make submissions. And if they believe that a project is not worthy for the communities, they understand that they have a right to say no. So those are the various engagements that we have been involved in, and then making sure that, you know, the women in those communities are taking leadership and making sure that they understand in terms of engaging in these policies that, you know, could be coming up. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa, and thank you, Simpiwe and Nomfundo. This question that I'm going to put on, to be our speakers and also you participants, please think about it. And after our speakers have spoken, if you feel that you can answer this question, please raise your hand and then you will be noted so that you can be able to answer this question. If you could speak directly to decision makers today, what change or action will you call for to address this crisis? If you could be directly If you could speak directly to decision makers today, what change or action would you call for to address this crisis? I'm going to change it. I'm reversing it. Over to you, Lisa, and then Nomfundo, and then I'll end with you, Simpiwe. Thank you.
Thank you, Comrade Francina. I think to me that is a very, very it's an interesting question. What I would actually call for is policy reforms. And those policy reforms are all the policies that, you know, we have to stand up as activists and just make sure that community voices are included. Make sure that when those policy reforms happen, from a government point of view, they include, you know, the issues that are happening in the communities. Because sometimes the policies that are being pushed forward are actually out of touch with reality on the ground. So that would be my key, you know, a key comment or point that I raise forward, that we need policy reforms that speak to the needs of the people on the ground.
Thank you, Lisa. Nomfundo?
Thank you so much for that direction, Lisa and Manfredsin. I definitely think there's support that should be directed that's immediate, that just speaks to the daily struggles of communities. Like Ulisa has just been has said, it's an interesting question. So I don't want to grandstand on the question as well, but I really think reinforcing support that's immediate, that speaks to the daily struggles, that speaks to the burdens, not just in engagement, not just because I feel so much money could be spent or is spent on these consultative processes. And you begin to wonder if there is money, how is this money then channeled? But I think on an immediate process, what are the daily struggles and how we can then facilitate that? I don't know what this looks like. Maybe the house can then hold me, but I think we need to then focus on those needs because they then tap onto the corruption, the greed, and all the some of the community issues we might face. Thank you so much, Manfredsin.
Thank you, Nomfundo. Simpiwe, over to you.
Yeah, firstly, it will be for them to improve our water management infrastructure, and two, to give out skills to the people. Already, we have the city of Joburg have the campaigns of Tunamanzi, of which they cannot even maintain it. So, but at the same time, we have unemployed, many of people that are unemployed with the skills of plumbing, doing the plumbing. I wish that they can even change those policies, maybe to bring in those unemployed people, where if there's a leakage of a pipe, anyone that it's been given the skills of doing the plumbing can go there and do the quotation and fix the pipes on time and give that to the municipality and get the person get paid instead of waiting for a week with the leaking pipes, water running around, and after they'll be telling us that there's no water. So they also need to use the skills that people are having. That also can assist on giving people jobs. Basically, skills are very important to give people skills. They just need to stop this thing of theirs to impose things to us that we need to normalize things that, oh, no, it's 6 o'clock, it's a load shedding, then it's a normal life. We don't need that. We need a change where people who can do things to happen on time, not to wait for a city power or public water while there are people that they can't maintain the problems that we are having within our communities. Thanks.
Thank you to all our panelists. Thank you, Simpiwe. Thank you, Lisa. And thank you, Nomfundo. For me to answer the question before I give the floor to others is that if I get the opportunity to change and address this crisis is number one, look at the way education it is for us. If we can have an education that builds the kids from grade R, they are not there to read one, two, three, but also give them the opportunity to draw and see the strength of kids, because these kids are not the same. Be able to do agriculture, be able to do waste management, and in that way, we'll be able to change this curriculum. And in that way, we'll be able to change the education part. And number two for us is if we can be able to invest more into renewable energy, but recycling what we have, not starting afresh. And also, what Simpiwe have just said is, pass those skills, give them a platform of them learning how to do maintenance of solars, everything to be able for us to safeguard what we have for us. We will have a better change in that way. That's my contribution. I don't know if we have people who wish to give input in answering the question of if you could speak directly to the decision makers today, what change or action would you call to address the crisis? Over to you, participants. Whoever wish to contribute, please raise your hand and then we'll be able to point you and then you can be able to give input. Thank you so much. Themba, Baba Themba, I see your hand. You can come in.
Oh, thank you very much. Greetings to everybody. This is a beautiful topic that we're having. And I would like to congratulate all the speakers on the panel. Mine is just short. It's just to say we can see that the infrastructure on water, on service delivery in general, and electricity, and on everything, like we don't have street lights anymore. That the government should stop outsourcing and do contribute to job creation. Because every day we have companies that are letting people off job because companies are just closing. And more people are left unemployed. For job creation, especially for maintenance on infrastructure, on maintenance of our roads, and all other amenities, we should use the local community there to fix this thing so that they're not left to decay forever until they become worse. And it also makes communities aware of their area. And the and also protect what they actually have, because there's no provision from government to provide any security on this type of maybe broken infrastructure. And another thing, we should also educate our people, if at all we have action to take against electricity or any other service delivery. People should educate people to stop breaking our own infrastructure. Because if you can break, if you want something, if you want service delivered on water, you go and burn a school or you go and burn a library, or maybe you just you know, break anything, any buildings, any government buildings, then who is, but this is for your own, you're going to break a clinic, because tomorrow people are going to get sick, where are they going to get services? So far, that is my contribution. Thank you.
Thank you, Brati. Thank you so much. I don't see any hand. If there's no anyone who wants to speak, and I'm gonna take it back to our panelist to be able to give us the closing remark. Each of you,
Mom Francina. Sorry.
Yes.
Is it okay if I ask a question? I didn't have an answer to your question, but I wanted to ask a question to the panelists.
Okay, feel free to do so.
Okay, so this is not directed at anyone in particular, but I think as the Climate Justice Coalition, what do you think we should be doing to center the gendered struggles of climate justice more? Like, what more can we do besides this webinar, which I do think it's important to let people speak about, you know, their struggles, but what can we be doing as a movement to strengthen the position of women within the movement?
Anyone can come in?
For me, to this question, I think first we need to educate our people, especially women. They need to know, one, to value themselves as women and know what they stand for and what does it mean to be a woman. I mean, there's a lot of things that are happening, even in our house. We are doing the jobs like that we are not paid for. At some point, I just feel like our government needs to pay us for the unpaid jobs that we are doing daily. I mean, we are looking after kids. For instance, I can do multitask in my house, do the washing this side, and on the other side, I'm cooking, not seeing the little one, what she's doing. Going to the stove, get burned. When I'm taking that child to a clinic or to a hospital, the social worker are brought in. What happened? What you were doing? You were not looking for this child. So there's a lot that is happening in our lives as a woman. So hence I'm saying, at some point I feel like government need to pay us, especially the women that are not paying, for looking for those kids, looking after those kids. At some point, we see the gender-based violence has been caused by a man. He's not employed. The anger that he has, the frustration that he has, is taking out of a woman. So those are the challenges that we're meeting. So if we can understand ourselves as women and what does it mean to be a woman, if maybe we can start now, try to advocate those kind of things to our fellow women, I think that thing, it can bring a change. I don't know whether we should open clubs for women, not the Stockfels ones where we'll do buying pods and whatsoever, but talking about the issues, our real issues, the daily life that we are facing, we open those kind of clubs so that we can understand who are we, what are we stand for as women.
Thank you so much for that, Sinpiwe, for sharing. I think CJC is already doing something in that regard, but I would really love more documentation just across South Africa. What are women doing for self-resilience, and what does politics of care means for them? And I think blueprinting all of these success stories across each other and maybe creating platform for us to be able to blueprint these success stories, it then opens up for channeling, how do we then get support? What does support look like? And I think most of the time when we say support, people are scared. It does not mean financial. It could also be non-financial. And how can you then use all the other stakeholders that are within that have access to the support that the different women need? That would be great. I'm also missing a bit of the voice around the importance of childcare. As someone who frequently travels a lot, I've realized the importance of social care, of social support structures. And in absence of those, how are mothers making sure that their kids are protected? So I think there's a relativity in us in having to advocate for childcare within the climate justice, and also how effective some of these political reforms are to our daily struggles, because we're talking about the implementation, but we're not talking about the reality. So it's the paper versus reality. How can we confront that without having to boycott and having to damage some of the infrastructure, but just speaking honestly to the struggles and documenting the achievements? Thank you so much, Shazia, for that question. I'm excited to have heard that. Thank you.
Can I go next, Comrade Francina?
Yes, come in, Comrade Lisa.
Okay. Thank you so much for the question, Shazia. I think it's the CJC is already doing quite a lot of work, and it's been very phenomenal. But I still think that in terms of making sure that women's voices are raised and heard, one of the key things we can look into doing as a coalition would probably making sure that with the women, I know because it's a coalition, there's organizations that have, adaptation plans whereby women, in fact, alternative development, whereby women are having community gardens to provide for the families, but also to provide employment for the people in the area. There's also other initiatives that are happening. So if we could have some sort of exchange programs within the coalition, take a certain group of women from a specific area to go to another area, I think that would empower women, because they would understand we are not in this fight alone. There's other people that are doing work somewhere. And when it comes to energy issues particularly, I think what we have seen is a lot of women in Saldanha, they were against this issue of co-powerships when they came into the area, when it was a discussion that, there would be a ship that would be put into an area so that it supplies energy to the country. But then there were issues of cost. So there were also issues of, environmental harm. And to those women that are fishing in the area, it was women of the West Coast that were at the forefront, and fighting on those projects. And they won because it was announced after the new minister got into power that they are no longer part of the plan. So, I mean, those are the type of exchange discussions that we need to have to understand what our communities in Mpumalanga are doing, because I understand there are women that are at the forefront of mining in that side that are fighting, these injustices. So those cross meetings to just share information, share knowledge of what is happening, how do we upskill each other as women, I think it would add value so much. Thank you.
Thank you so much to everyone. My last question. What is telling a story mean to you? And you can put the closing remark on that one. What is telling a story mean to you, and how can it be done? Anyone can come in. Thank you.
I'm going to come in here, Comrade Francina. Telling a story to me is trying to paint a picture of lived realities on the ground. And I think this is what I mentioned earlier, that sometimes our government is, it seems like they're not in touch with reality. And when you tell a story as an activist that is on the ground, that is experiencing these issues on a day-to-day basis, I think when you are the one that are putting it out there and narrating the story, it becomes important to basically paint a picture of what is actually happening on the ground. And I think as the activists in the space, we have been doing that quite very well.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Nomfundo.
I'm so sorry for having interjected. But I think telling a story for me is articulating or narrating the realness, the vulnerability, the marginalization, the intersectionality of our lived realities on off daily. It could be in story, it could be in, I mean, in sound, it could be nonverbal. It differs in so many, many layers, but when it gives the realness without any assumptions. In closing remarks, thank you so much for the opportunity in having to invite me into the space and in having to just listen to the other speakers and how our lived realities are intersected as women and how we come into solidarity. Thank you so much, Mantonsin.
Thank you, Nomfundo. Simpiwe, over to you.
For me, telling the story, at some point, I feel like it's very important because I always say there's no one who can tell your story better than you. Also, thinking that at some point, I don't know, maybe we can do a documentary about women telling their story, their daily life story, and maybe being posted out there so that people can see how we live. Even if it can be all the provinces, one lady, or maybe rural and urban women, so that they can see there's no much different when telling our story. So with that, I would love to say thank you and the opportunity that I've been given to be on this platform. I really appreciate. Thank you.
Shazia, do you have anything to say before I wrap up the conversation?
Not at all. I'm so happy to have been part of this discussion. Thanks so much to our amazing host, Mam Francina, and our amazing speakers, Nomfundo, Simpiwe, and Lisa. I think it's been an excellent discussion.
Let me take this opportunity to thank our speakers, Simpiwe, Nomfundo, and you, Lisa, for agreeing to be part. And thank you for your contributions. I've learned a lot. And for those who were not part, I think it will be shared so that people can be able to listen to. And thank you so much for the opportunity for me to moderate, and thank you so much to the participants for making time to join our webinar. Thank you so much. Have a great day. The webinar is officially closed. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Just Us and the Climate, a production of the Climate Justice Coalition. To find out more about the coalition and our work to advance climate justice, visit climatejusticecoalition.org. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and share it widely. The more people it reaches, the more we can help grow the movement for climate justice.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.